Hi, this is Janice Torres from Yo Quiero Dinero. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter. Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America N.A. Copyright 2024.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to another DTNS Labs interview edition. I'm Tom Merritt, and very excited to be joined today by an old friend, Mr. Russ Pitts. Russ, how's it going?
Hey, Tom. Emphasis on old. Yes.
We are both ancient.
We're up there. It's the years are starting to show. I don't know about you, but I got the mileage.
Oh, man. No, you look great.
Thank you.
I think you look in better condition than I feel. That's for sure.
It's the plumpness, actually. It kind of irons out all the wrinkles.
Yeah.
I actually stopped taking care of myself and ended up looking better.
That's an interesting, you know, given that the last DTNS Labs interview was about a guy taking care of his health.
Maybe get the
counterpoint to that.
Yeah, exactly. Like 10 months of like stress eating and self-medication. Uh-huh. And I look like a million bucks.
It's that old hostile environment theory.
Exactly,
make your body a hostile environment for
hostile
infection.
Environment theory, exactly. Yeah.
Well, Russ and I go way back. Not to get too far down that road, but we met probably what 95-ish, working together at Half Price Books in Austin, Texas. During that decade, we put on 6 episodes of a cable access television show, sketch comedy show. We wrote a play together. And then later, the next decade, we both worked at Tech TV on the screensavers. This is the first decade we haven't been on a team together. We haven't worked in the same place.
That's absolutely true.
We have 2 years.
Well, I'm on your show now. That's a good start.
Right. That's kind of getting there. Yeah.
It's kind of getting there. We'll have to figure out how to get you involved in my thing, and then we can fudge it. Then we can say we sort of work.
Yeah.
Together.
Right. Right. Okay. I like this. But I have a hard time remembering sometimes that other people know you from lots of other stuff. Now, most recently, you've got a brand new adventure going on.
That's true. Yes, it's actually a return for me to escapistmagazine.com, a website that I joined maybe 6 months after it was founded in 2005, that I worked at for roughly 5 years, eventually became editor-in-chief of, worked with a lot of content creators, editors, writers, helped a lot of people start their careers. I was actually talking to Disney about a story that we might do with them later this year. And I was able to tell them that they have no fewer than 4 writers right now working on Star Wars novelizations that started their careers at Escapist Magazine.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah,
And the Escapist was kind of where your career finally took the hockey stick, right?
Yeah, I think it's where I finally found what I should be doing with my time, right? Because obviously, we worked together at the bookstore, and then Tech TV was not my jam. It was notoriously not my jam.
Yes, folks can find that on the internet elsewhere.
Yeah, just do a quick search. It's not hard. I wrote a book on it. It's not hard to find. And then I worked in theater for a while. I went back to my theater roots, worked in professional theater in Boston for a while, and had a great time doing that. But it's not a place where one really forges a career unless, you know, you go to Boston or New York and really take the plunge. So The Escapist was, it was my first step into video games journalism. And I found a great home there. And my career, as you said, it just exploded. And I've been doing that on and off ever since.
Became editor-in-chief there, went on to help found Polygon.
That's right.
And do all kinds of great stuff, including the charity, Take This. So how did you find yourself back at The Escapist now, when I think a lot of people had given it up for dead?
A lot of people had, and I had actually given up on working in games media. I was moving on. I had started my film company, and I was running the charity. I'm still chairman of TakeThis.org, but I've stepped back from running that day-to-day now to focus on this. So, I mean, I had a film project in the works. We were pre-producing a new film that I should have finished by now, actually. And instead I've been doing this. In November of last year, The Escapist is known for the content we produced and some of the writers that we worked with and video creators, of course. But it was also a very large community. We had a very active forum. We had it gamified. You could win badges. You could earn cred by posting a number of posts or posting a number of topics. It was a very active and very dedicated forum. And that forum existed well beyond the point where the owners of The Escapist had stopped actually creating content or selling ads or anything, right?
So an interesting phenomenon of the internet. I don't know if anyone remembers userfriendly.org. It's still going, automatically posting cartoons that were written 10 years ago every day, but it's got a big forum of people like that. That's a thing. That's a thing that happens. I remember Anchor Desk at ZDNet, long after it had been abandoned, still had people participating. It's so interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's pretty common in games too. Games that have been abandoned by their creators will still have very active communities that sign protests and request to get the game put on their own private servers so they could keep it running for the community long after the company's given up. Yeah. So that community was there, and we heard from one of the forum members in 2017, November of last year, that the owners were officially pulling the plug. They had fired the volunteer forum moderators, which I don't know how one does that, but they did. There was no – they had gotten rid of the entire staff.
You are not allowed to volunteer. Sit down. Put your hand down.
Get away. Go away. Shoo. Off with you. They had closed down the Durham, North Carolina offices, liquidated everything, and it was – They had basically strip mined it over the course of a year and a half, 2 years, and the time was nigh, right? So I asked my lawyer to reach out to the owners and see if we could talk about buying it. And long story short, I didn't, but I ended up partnering with a company called Enthusiast Gaming out of Toronto. They own a number of game related sites. And they ended up buying The Escapist, hired me on as a VP of their company and also as editor-in-chief of The Escapist to relaunch it and hopefully, bring it back.
See, now most of the time when something like this happens, you hear about people trying to preserve the archives, right? That's where the story usually goes. Such and such site is going down. Everyone's racing to download it. And archive.org is trying to preserve it and keep it forever. What spurred you to say we can do better than that? We can revive it. We can rebuild it faster, better, stronger.
Stronger than before. We have the technology. Funny story, true. We have the technology, but it's old and it's terrible. So we're making new technology. Like I said, I wasn't interested in getting back into games media. A lot happened after, almost immediately after I left Polygon in 2014. We had this whole big crazy Gamergate thing that changed and or ruined lives. We lost a lot of people from the industry, and my wife included, she was a games journalist for a long time, and she drifted off at that same time. So, I mean, there were and I had moved on. I was excited working on my movies, but the idea of The Escapist's final last chapter being its final chapter, right? Its most previous chapter, where it had basically been run into the ground, had taken a weird radical political slant there at the end. The industry basically abandoned it. Its writers and creators abandoned it. It was a dirty, dirty scene. And, I would hear about it because I had a long history there and I still had friends there. But I was also trying to ignore it because it was sad. It was bringing me down, right? So for me, yeah, the archives were important, but more important than that was making sure that this thing that we had all put so much time into and had built could have a more graceful end than, I don't know, being tapering off and then being shuttled off to archive.org. I also knew how it worked. And even though it had been neglected for so long, it's still a profitable entity. The systems we put in place in 06, 07, 08 are still working. There was at least still one content creator working on it. And a lot of the referral content and related content, sort of sticky web stuff we built back in the last decade, is actually still doing its job. So I knew that I could come in and hit the ground running on this, bring in a lot of former creators, bring them back to help rewrite the history of the thing, and basically pick up where we left off.
So. I know you mentioned that there was one of the writers or creators that stuck it out from bridging your era to your new era. How? That was my first question when I read your post about that. I was like, how did that guy keep sane to stick around?
Yeah. Well, that's Yahtzee Croshaw, and he does the very popular Zero Punctuation video show. And I think the popularity of that show has allowed him over the years to sort of insulate himself from, from the behind-the-scenes antics. He just migrated to the United States fairly recently. So he's committed by virtue of the fact that he wants to stay here, and that's a good job for him. But he's been able to do his show without having very much contact with anyone else basically for 10 years. I hired him 10 years ago. We added a couple of branding images to his show, but beyond that, I said, "Hey, just keep doing what you're doing." And he's been doing that.
He's your
almost
constant.
The exact same way. Yeah. He's been doing that almost the exact same way for 10 years. So I spoke to him briefly when I started looking into buying the thing, and he was enthusiastic about it maybe having a better end. So that was good for me. That was validating for me, and it gave me energy to move on. And I think him knowing that there might be a sort of return to form was good for him as well.
I don't want to feed your ego too much, but
okay.
Do you think Escapist survives if you don't try and fail to buy it yourself? Do you think that Enthusiast Gaming notices it and figures it out? Would somebody else have come along, or is this a dumpster dive basically?
That's actually a really good question. It's a valid question. There is some debate over how Enthusiast found out that it was up for sale. I think it's possible they put in a bid whether or not I've already started trying to buy it. Mm-hmm. I know there was at least one other entity that was interested in buying it at one time. I think it survives in a very different form if I'm not involved, mm-hmm. right? I think you have, obviously it's a brand that people are familiar with. And it's making money, and people were more excited about it than I even expected them to be. I mean, the noise when we announced was very surprising. A lot of people were paying attention, and I was expecting we'd be able to sort of launch this and be kind of quiet about it and take our time and get it right. But no, people are actually paying attention. So I think the idea that we could take this thing that had been meaningful at one time and bring it back to life has merit. So I think there's only a few ways to fail at that. I think sort of rebuilding it in a way that gives it style and panache and cultural meaning that it had before, and perhaps even more so, that's a harder trick, and I don't think there's a lot of people who would have tried that.
Yeah, no, it is truly it's impressive that it has revived. And to put it in terms that only you and I can understand, it's as if you found the first edition in the dumpster instead of Mr. Tiny and brought it to Leslie's attention.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kids, don't even ask your parents. They won't know either.
They won't know either. Yeah.
There are maybe a dozen people that could possibly hear that and laugh, but I had to do it. So no, you're doing a great thing. So where you go from here? Now you're in there. You're slugging away. You've got the engine started. Where are you driving to?
Well, my hope is that we drive to a place where we can reach a more adult audience than is typically targeted with game websites. You know, there's a lot of people out there who have grown up with.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Video games and genre media. And most websites are in the sort of Saturday Night Live track, right, where they're continually refreshing their approach for the kids who are 12 to 18, right, because they're the most active online and they're highly prized by advertisers, which is fine. And so there's a lot of people doing that, and I don't want to do it in general, but I don't want to do it and go up against people who are – you know, way better funded than I am. So why? So, you know, I want to bring something to the web for people like you and me who've grown up with this stuff, who are interested in it, maybe have less disposable time, but have more disposable income. So they're valuable to a certain type of advertiser. I can talk to them because I'm one of them. And I think that's a niche that a lot of folks aren't hitting right now. And it, for me anyway, let's us go back to what the original purpose of The Escapist was in the first place, is to try and talk about video games and media and the issues raised by them and the people making them in a way that's mature and interesting and takes it seriously. It takes these things seriously as art forms themselves, right?
It does feel like you're capitalizing on the fact that we're the first video game generation to continue to play our video games, right? Where I'm going with this is, you know, the folks who were in high school playing the Atari 2600 gave way to the folks playing the NES, gave way to the PC gamers. But now, for the first time, World of Warcraft, you know, is still around, still being played, right? There are franchises, and people complain about sequels, you know, sequel mania, but there are franchises that are just continuing to play. And so it's not like, oh, I can tell what era gamer you are by the games you know, because those games are sticking around longer now.
Yeah, and we have game creators who are making games for people who've grown up with the medium. Bethesda Game Studios, for example, almost every game they make is for, you know, it's rated mature and is for people who are adults or consider themselves such. Yeah, World of Warcraft just came out with an expansion and it did gangbusters.
Yeah.
There's massive numbers of people. You know, it's not as big as it was. It's not like the 6 billion or whatever it was back in its heyday, but it's still doing really well. And there are lots of people still playing it. I think there is. I think there are people for whom games are still a part of their lives, but game media has fallen away because no one's really speaking to them. And so I'm going to try to do that. You know, that hasn't. We have a huge archive. We have 13 years of content. We have legacy content creators who are still creating, some who are coming back. You know, we have the website has spanned multiple editorial teams and multiple editorial directions. So we've got a lot of work to do to iron out some of those wrinkles. And I'm just what I'm looking forward to right now is just doing the work, right? I mean, we put out a bunch of announcements. We had some discussion about the politics of the thing or whether or not we would be political. And frankly, I've always found as an editor that if the work doesn't speak for itself, then we haven't done our jobs, right? Yeah. So we've started creating new content. This week, I think, is the first week we've had new content each day. We have a website, a lot of work to do on redesigning the website, as it's still fairly broken. But I think within the next few weeks, we will be up to speed fully producing content. And my hope is that at that point, most questions will be answered by the work we're creating.
I want to finish up by circling back to what you said about having left games journalism. Your wife left games journalism. Mm. I was talking to a friend of mine. I don't want to out the friend, but they have switched careers because it's not necessarily exactly from games journalism, but sort of the same general mix, because they just didn't want to deal with all of that stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. And so they've gone into not entirely different, but they've gone into a different type of job. And I was explaining that to another friend of mine who said, well, come on, that's just the internet. You know, you got to toughen up. I'm like, or not. Or you just decide that you don't want to do it. And it was kind of like I could see the scales falling from his eyes. Like, because in his mind, he was thinking, well, this, you know, I mean, yeah, of course it's bad out there, but you folks who do this are used to it, right? And it was a revelation to me that was still the attitude. It's like, well, no, at a certain point, you folks who do this don't want to deal with it anymore. And it got to that point. And I wonder if we've turned the corner yet, or if you're kind of at the corner that's being turned where people might be willing to come back. Are we starting to see society start to learn from that whole experience?
Yeah. Well, in a very real sense, that's part of the coming of age story, right? Like you and I were there at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And we used to say that. I remember getting hate mail and death threats at my email account at Tech TV, sure. Right? And that was in the olden days.
Yeah.
That was pre.com bomb, which a lot of folks don't even remember.
Yeah.
I think these cultures, and in a lot of ways, internet culture is much younger than video game culture, but still suffers from a lot of they both still suffer from a lot of the same problems, that these cultures tend to get colonized by, you know, people with a lot of time on their hands. And mostly male, and they create these environments that young men that are comfortable for young males, right? And they take on this sort of locker room or highly charged environment. And as communities evolve, you see a lot more people who want to get engaged, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're at the point now. What the internet community now? What is it? Old enough to vote? But maybe. It's maybe close enough, old enough to vote or see an R-rated movie.
But it still
movie.
Doesn't know what it wants to do with its life.
Yeah, it's right. It's just starting to take things seriously,
yeah,
like politics.
It hasn't picked a major yet.
Yeah. It hasn't yet. You know, it hasn't yet learned how to compromise, and it still takes itself very seriously, yeah. And it still has a lot of testosterone and
it's
hormones.
Had a couple fights and yeah.
I think it's it has been the environment for the longest time, but. There are things happening online now. I mean, we have a generation of people who are adults for whom the internet is a given.
Yeah.
Like how – I mean, that's a thing to – my dogs are barking. A truck just drove by.
Yeah. Yeah, no worries.
It's an interesting phenomenon. And so when you – it's like, you know, taking for granted that you have electric lighting. And if the electric lighting, you know, in your town was bad, then it would be it's just the way it is. But it doesn't have to be that way, right?
Right.
And I think we now have a critical mass of people who are using this thing, which is basically everybody, to where a lot of the social mores and the social contracts that we take for granted in other spaces are now expected on the internet.
Yeah. We're learning. We're learning how to deal with this brand new massive broadcast tool where the stuff that you said to each other on the walk home from high school can now reverberate around the world.
it's a little scary and sad, right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine being a young person when the internet exists. Like, there are, you know, shared experiences you and I have had. I'm like, thank goodness Instagram didn't exist, right?
Sure. it's
a different environment, and I think things become louder and live longer. And I think as an internet culture, but also as a culture in general, we have an obligation to learn to get along even better because of these tools. And I think a lot of people are going to have trouble with that.
There's an interesting Scientific American issue about the human brain this month. And one of the things, one of the scientists writing in it stipulated, well, maybe not stipulated is the right word, but kind of pointed out that we advance by innovation and tradition. We are the one of the only animals that does both. We pass along information to each other over time, and we take that information and try to improve upon it. We copy, but then we try to improve on the copy, and that's what drives us forward. And we're in the midst of that process right now, it feels like.
Yeah, I think we've moved on from the pioneering stage of the internet, and we're now in the colonization phase, right? Mm-hmm. You and my generation helped create this thing, and now there are younger generations who have inherited it and are trying to make it their own. And I think they will succeed. They always do, and I look forward to it because I think they have, in a lot of respects, the younger generations have a better perspective on it because it's been here for their entire lives.
Hey, Russ, thank you so much. It was good. It's always good chatting with you and good talking with you about this sort of thing. If folks want to follow you, find out more what's going on with you, both at Take This or The Escapist, where should they go?
At Russ Pitts on Twitter. That is the best place to find me. I'm always there. Literally always.
Yeah. You're not going to quit Twitter, huh?
You know, I spent some time on Mastodon, and it was like trying to pick a Linux distro when I don't even want to use Linux. So, I don't think I'm going to leave Twitter. I think we have an interesting opportunity now where they are actually listening to what we have to say, which hasn't always been the case. So I think sticking it out and trying to change from within is where I'm going to go.
Well, Russ, thank you so much for joining us. And folks, if you like these sorts of interviews, keep supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/DTNS. We're happy to say that DTNS Labs Games has graduated into its own show, the monthly video game briefing. So check that out as well. We'll talk to you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.